Morning, everyone.
Morning.
As I said, it's a great day, but it started raining again, so I guess. But it's still a great day since we're all here. So my name is Chuck Smith. I'm the program director at the Black Prairie Initiative, and thank you for the opportunity to come and speak with you this morning. I also send greetings and welcome from Reverend Marsha down at Oregon City, and a little pre-hello to Reverend Craig, who I know from a couple years ago when he was with us before. So you're in for a real treat to have him as your pastor. So my presentation today, the title is The Gift and Power of Bringing Spirituality to Our Work. So now, I was born a social worker. I didn't know that at the time. But later on, I found out my uncle was a social worker, although the only thing I remember about him until he died was that he would stay with my grandmother and eat dinner with her, and then I would come up to take out the trash and get my $2 a week for doing so, which turned into a couple of meals and playing around with the dog and everything else. But I got $2 on top of it. I would see him then, and later on I found out he was a social worker. So I wasn't the first social worker in the family. I may be the last, but I haven't convinced any of my children to do that. But, and Charles didn't say this to the hard group, but I was on the path to being a minister, but I realized that probably wasn't such a good idea for a lot of different reasons. So I studied social work, and I grew up in the time of the Blues Brothers. They were in the movie, the story, and so one of the lines in their movie is, "We're on a mission from God." They asked me what they're doing, so we're on a mission from God. So that was the big joke that I had when I was working early in my career, is we would be in my supervisor joke, like, "What are we doing today? We're on a mission from God." And help people doing social working kinds of things. So this presentation today on the gift and power of bringing spirituality to our work, I realized it was rather easy because I was in a helping field, so you know, it wasn't like I was making widgets and stuff like that, but my job was to help people, and so you know, combining spirituality might not be that difficult since you're already doing something good to help out other people. However, that was when I was young, and my spiritual journey was just beginning, and so today I'd like to spend a little time talking about sort of how I came to get to the place I am today, and how this connection of the power and gift of bringing spirituality to our work might manifest itself in some of these stories that happened along that path. So when I was preparing to do this, it reminded me of a Nina Simone song that you may know. It's "I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free." Remember that song from the 60s?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay. So now it turns out she didn't write it. William Taylor and Richard Lamb wrote the song, but she recorded it in 1967. It was written a few years before that. So I'm not going to try to sing it, I'm just going to go over the words. But I want to go through the verses because as I went through the verses and looked it over again, I could see the evolution of my own spirituality and how it manifests itself in my work, in my daily life, kind of matched how the song went. So first it begins with, "I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole world to hear." And so the first part of my journey started with being able to speak and becoming authentic, saying it. When I was first working, we were trying to do some revolutionary things in my work setting. So, you know, it was all about individual achievement. And I said, "No, we're a team." So they had a sort of employee of the year thing that they did, this big organization at work. So I nominated our team to be the employee of the year. Right? You can see where this is going, right? And we won. Yes. Okay. All right. So this kind of changes because I thought that was more authentic to what we were doing. We were working with teenagers who were in big trouble in their families, and we had units of three who all shared working with these teenagers and their parents. And so it's hard to pick out one worker who was doing a better job than anybody else because it was a team effort. So we pushed that idea to the organization, and the next employee of the year was an actual team of three. Later on, I came across a book called Flawless Consulting by Peter Block. And he mentioned the idea about being authentic. So in helping other people, sometimes we think about our specialty and what kind of knowledge we bring to the situation. But he was sort of further on in his career, and he made a big push about the idea that being authentic with whoever you're dealing with is probably the biggest service you can provide. sort of being who you are, speaking your truth. And I said, okay, that sounds good to me. So I ran off to do that. That was pretty cool. Now, my spiritual journey, I started as a United Methodist. I think I was born before they became United Methodist, but by the time I realized what church I was in, the merger had happened. And then when I was in my 30s, I began studying Subakdo, which is a Korean martial art. And I've been doing it for 26 years. I keep losing count of the number of years. 26. And that's also a part of my spiritual journey, which I'll talk about. Later on, I ended up becoming a UU, thanks to my beautiful wife, who, by the way, all the items going to the service, she went through the man through the book in the hymnal and picked out the items that matched with the presentation. So I can't take credit for the songs or the readings myself. And then a concept called the Pyramids of Power, which is an African-centered foundation for optimal health, which is what we use at the Black Parentage. So I'll cover each of these as I talk about my own spiritual journey. So one thing that was cool, a couple weeks ago at Atkinson, formerly Atkinson, they introduced the song, anybody know the UU Principles song? It's a kid's song?
Yes.
Okay, all right, so I shouldn't make you sing it. But all right, I can do this one. So it's like Go In Here. You got that one? Okay. But, okay, you got the words?
Yeah.
I mean, you got it memorized too?
Yeah.
Oh, cool, this will be fun. All right, let's do it. All right. And you probably can play it. No, okay, all right. Okay, one. Each person is worthwhile. Two, be kind in all you do. There you go. Three, we help each other learn. Four, in search for what is true. Five, all people give hope. Six, build care of a peaceful world. Here we go. Seven, we take care of the earth. And that brings us back to me and you. Participation part of the presentation, so you're covered, you can relax with your own. So that began my sort of spiritual journey on the UU side. I'm like, okay, I like the kids' version of that because I can remember that versus the seven principles. So the second verse in the song is, I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart. I wish you could know what it means to be me. Then you'd see and agree that every man should be free. So the second part of my journey was to figure out then what's in my heart. So like I said, I was born a social worker, almost meandered over to being a minister of some type. But, you know, you grow and you grow up and you have to figure out who you are and stuff like that. And for a while we're kind of self-centered. So this idea about what's in my heart and what's my true purpose in life wasn't the top thing on my mind all the time. I want to give myself some credit, but not too much credit. So my study of martial arts kind of helped me with the idea of how to live in the day-to-day way that reflects the values that I hold. And so in this particular martial art, the purpose of martial arts, as we define it, is rejuvenation of the body and extending life to its fullest potential, as long as possible. And the art is built on the idea of preventing conflict. So we have at Mission 2000 before our founder died, and he talked about human relations worldwide as part of his mission for the new millennium. And the good news is we didn't have to accomplish it by 2000. We got the whole century to do so. So we got about 85 years left to bring out good human relations worldwide. And that really struck me as I studied more, because even though you spend a lot of time punching and kicking and everything else, it's all about how to not be in those situations. And it's all about how to then live a way where it's never necessary for it to happen. And I can happily say that I've never had to use the physical version of my art in 26 years. Now, I use the mental and spiritual version of my art every day, every moment. Because part of that includes bringing myself in harmony with other people. Even people who I see on my more instinctual side have trouble with dealing, connecting to. I also have been a trainer for most of my adult life as far as in social service area, and learned how to do motivational interviewing and started teaching that also. So that's just a way of bringing out the motivation inside of other people to make changes in their life, which is kind of a cool thing, nice and easy, not controlling anybody else. But one of the things I discovered was You know, you can teach something out of a book or you can go read a book, but what's my value added when I'm doing the presentation? And what I realized over the years is I've never done this this particular strategy in the way that was in the book, because I'd always worked in different settings, and I bought myself to it too. Right? So I bought my arts, my martial arts, to how I do motivational interviewing, and I brought my stories of life about how we help people change, or how I may have helped someone change by inspiring them, by helping them find their voice, by helping them discover who they might be, and have the courage to be who they can be. And so in my teachings, if you ever happen to come to a motivational interviewing class, you may be scratching your head, so where's the motivational interviewing part? And I'll say, it's over here, it's on the slides, and then here's the stories that go with real life and how it really works. And so what's really cool about this is that then people started coming up to me saying, I really liked the class because you made it real. Right? And I've come across these things before, and I knew about the concepts, but you made it real. You made it, like, personal to our lives versus just something out of a book about a therapeutic technique around listening to people and being reflective and, you know, asking open-ended questions. See, right there. You got half the training right there. Okay, and then summarizing what people say. That's all done. But that's not really the crux of the art. That's not really the crux of what's going on. It's that encounter between people when they connect with each other. So this led me to another book that a friend gave to me, and I adopted and actually rolled into the work we were doing at the Black Parent Initiative. A gentleman named Yuri Chapman, and he was a Baptist minister, but also was a healthcare manager and ran a number of large healthcare organizations, and he wrote a book called Sacred Works and Sacred Encounters. And so what he defines as sacred encounters is when deep need is met with deep love. That's pretty straightforward, but pretty heavy too when you think about how it applies. So he has a Christian background, but he talks about the idea that every encounter that we have with other people is sacred. Now, if we take up the challenge to treat them as sacred, then lots of possibilities can happen from there. And so every encounter, every time we meet eye to eye with someone and put our attention fully to them and understand who they are, what they're saying to us, and then respond with that depth of caring, not being afraid to understand their pain, understand what they're going through, to be afraid of how uncomfortable it might make us feel to experience or even walk for just a couple moments in someone else's challenges in life. So when we talk about social justice, you know, that's what we're talking about, is, okay, how do I have the courage to fully experience what you're going to let me know about yourself and your experience and not run from it because I have a safe place, my safe place is Milwaukee, Oregon, that I can run to with a palm outside the back window, and I can have tranquility, and I can sit in the morning and sit for 15 minutes and meditate, and nothing bothers me except for my dog. I can do that. But when I listen to someone else's story and realize they might not be able to escape that, and what would it be like for me if I couldn't escape that, and how would I feel, and can I respond like I'm really there with that person? So coming to know my spirit and how it can be a part of my work was that next part of the journey. The third verse of the song is, I wish I could give all I'm longing to give. I wish I could live like I'm longing to live. I wish I could do all the things that I can do. And though I'm way overdue, I'd be starting anew. So this is a powerful point because I've gone a number of years just kind of either faking it, playing around with it, or whatever else. And here comes Charles McGee. So I met Charles McGee about 10 or 12 years ago, and he gave me a hard time about living in Vancouver. And later on, we got over that part, and I moved across the river. He's pretty compelling. And I found myself connected to the Black Parent Initiative, first as a consultant to help develop some of the programming, and then moving over, taking the challenge of leaving the job. Now, I don't know if you ever worked for the state, but they got good benefits. Right? And I was at Portland State University for 18 years, and I left. Yeah, exactly. I got my knees done before I left. So that's why I didn't want to jump off of there. They're only about a year old, and they tell you not to jump. So I couldn't run.
Oh, boy.
I tell my students at Subaco, don't make me have to do this technique, but I'll do it once for you. All right, so I started consulting there in 2013 and then began in earnest leaving the other job after the new knees were in place and the insurance covered it in February 2015. And it's probably one of the biggest steps and most powerful steps in my life when I think about my spiritual journey. Because in doing that, I got in touch with what it meant to be a black person who has pride in themselves and really values who they are. So that book is meaningful to me, even though it's not my book to read to my children, it's Charles' book to read to his. But it's part of what we think is important, that we do have to understand who we are and have a good appreciation of that, and then all the possibilities of who we can be can begin to come out. And it's not about fixing people, it's not about steering them in certain kinds of ways or controlling their life in any kind of way. It's about helping them to discover the inherent value of who they are. Sounds something kind of you is the inherent value right, of who they are. And once they really take that into their soul, encouraging them then to express it in everything that they do. Right? So I got into a job where I can express who I am completely and not have to worry about, you know, what's the right thing to say, what's the wrong thing to say. I'm not proselytizing. I'm talking about who I am, and I'm sharing my story, and we're going to connect in love with one another, and you're going to get from that experience whatever you get. And when I connect with you, I'm going to get a lot of things. So being here, even though you don't get to talk very much, looking at your faces and just connecting back and forth, I'm inspired, right? I'm touched. I'm changed by today's experience. So at BPI, we discovered with a colleague or a mentor of mine who turned me on to the book, The Pyramids of Power, an evidence-based approach to optimal health. And in America, we talk about just not being sick. And from African tradition, we talk about being healthy, both or in all domains, intellectually, emotionally, physically, spiritually, and socioeconomically, and how we put all those things together. So it's a small book, but it's a foundation for studies to go on for a lifetime. And what's been nice about working at this organization and being a program director is that I can sort of make these things happen. So I can create and be in an organization just how I imagined it. So we took that book, everyone got the copy, everyone reads it, and every month we study one element of optimal health. And everyone's challenged to not only do their job, but also make themselves optimally healthy so they can be a picture for anyone they work with of what optimal health can look like and how this can be a part of their life too. And revolutionary things have happened in people's lives. I want to talk about spiritual health for just a moment. There's two levels. The first in these elements, you can write these down if you like, or you can go get the book. Very simple. The elements for spiritual health is unconditional love, optimal meditation, and optimal attunement. So that's at the first level. And then at the second level, non-judgment, teaching by example, releasing to the inner self, and releasing to the Creator. And if we follow those six elements, we will be able to reach optimal spiritual health. And these are connected to other parts of health. But doing those things helps us reach spiritual health in terms of our connection to creation, our connection to the world around us, our connection to the environment, to people, everything else in the way of being in harmony. The last verse of the song is, "Well, I wish I could be like a bird in the sky. Oh, how sweet it would be if I found I could fly. Oh, I'd soar to the sun and look down at the sea. Then I'd sing because I know how it feels to be free." And the first thing I've discovered after coming across the Pyramids of Power is the benefits of optimal spiritual health, and that is joy and inner peace. And I can wake up each morning, even with the burdens of the organization and the burdens of everything going on, and problems in the world, problems in Portland, toxic air, you know, there's a new problem every day you wake up, with a sense of inner peace, with a calmness, and realizing that it's real because people say, "You seem so relaxed, Chuck." And it wasn't because of you know, external stimulants. It was being medicated. So some people do that, right? You see some people, they're using things to medicate themselves, they're using things to help themselves calm down, but they're not fully attuned, right? They're checked out, and they look like they're calm. But can I be fully present and still have that calmness and peace within myself? The second, I want to share two quick stories. One was, we did a retreat with our Department of Human Services partners in the self-sufficiency unit. And so I don't know if you've ever dealt with DHS and this effort to help people become self-sufficient. It's not working as well as they'd like. And not only is it a pretty oppressive experience for the people who are clients who come there, it turns out it's a pretty oppressive experience for the people who work there. And so we spent the day in the retreat with our partners there, and it came to light. It was very clear to us the difference between our experience of reaching for optimal health and their experience of not knowing what it was like to be free. And so as part of the presentation or part of our conversation, I said, well, one thing that's different here is that here at BPI, we're free. We're free to be who we are. We're free to help people become who they can be. And we're free to speak the truth about optimal health and not be constrained or confined by rules or regulations or what people may want us to do that we find objectionable. And the rest of the staff just sort of looked in awe, like, you can do that? And they said, we do that every day. We expect it of people. We expect you to be free and to speak truth to whatever experiences people are having so that they can be free also. And it was a powerful moment because people talk about it all the time. My supervisor at work, she goes, yes, and we're free. The other is has to do with attunement and recognizing that what we need is already around us. It could be the person that you're talking to. It could be the experience you're about to have. But we have to be totally in touch with it. So we went on a retreat last fall as an organization out to Seaside. So, you know, we're all in Oregon. We know that Seaside is by the what? By the ocean. Sorry, by the ocean. Right. And good. Okay, the second part. So the group went out there, and we were at the World Mark. I'm not selling World Mark stocks, but if you use my name, I can get bonus points. And the World Mark is on the water, but when you come in, you don't really see the water from there. And about 3 hours later, a colleague of mine says, she goes, I just discovered the ocean when I went out here, you know, toward the pool. And I said, it's always been there. Now, I didn't say that to be flippant, but my spirit was like, what we discover, it's always been there. Mm-hmm. Just because my eyes open up doesn't mean that it's new. We didn't discover America. We didn't discover it. We just recognize something that's always been there. And this person recognized the ocean and the power of the ocean and the healing powers of it, but used the term like she discovered it because like it wasn't there before. And the truth was is that it's always been there. And it may take us a long time. It took me 50-some years for my eyes to open up to see the possibilities. It took me 50-some years to find DPI. Right? And it took this person the number of years it took her and the few hours it took even being by the beach to recognize that ocean had always been there, the healing powers of that water was there. So I want to close with this. So how is this power? How is this a powerful gift? People don't realize when they're free because they don't know what it is like to be free. When you share your love, when you give what you have, when you fly and see things from a spiritual perspective, from every angle, then you are providing the powerful gift of a spiritual self that is integrated with and transcends all that you do. Go forth and doing your work, doing